Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It is Texans training camp time, and it's practice number 8 today. So they're at the halfway point of the padded practices. 14 padded practices allotted to the Texans, and it's been announced that there will be a scrimmage on Thursday night at the stadium.
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, Sean, because that was a thought I had. You know, these thoughts that I have that I should be writing down during the weekend. But instead, I just wait for you to jog my memory.
Sure.
So they're having a scrimmage Thursday night, which as far as from what Bill O'Brien said, it's not going to be like a full tackling scrimmage. But
damn it.
But I do think that there's value in the preseason games, even for the veterans who don't play, just in going through the routine of getting ready for a game. Mm-hmm. Like putting your game uniform on and going through the warm-ups and everything. It's all that kind of just – you only get 16 of these a year in the regular season. And everything you can do to get guys mentally prepared for what it's like on game day, I think that's all part of getting back into the flow of things. So I'm glad he's doing that.
Probably no coincidence then that the scrimmage is 7 o'clock on a Thursday night. Their opener is 7 o'clock on a Thursday night, 2 weeks from Thursday.
Central time,
yeah. They're in the same time zone and everything. Yeah, so scrimmage on Thursday. They've got practice today and tomorrow, just team meetings on Wednesday. So that's the way the week lays out for the Texans.
Boy, there's nothing worse, though, too. But having said that, as a veteran player, when you have a preseason game and you go through warm-ups and then don't play, oh. It's such a boring 3 hours because it's not comfortable being in a game uniform that was sweating and is now as cold, and you're standing there trying to help out the rookies and everything, but you get so hungry by the end of the game and you get the hot dog smell. The hot dogs won't be smelling good, so that won't be tempting the veteran players who aren't playing.
Well, because the concession stands aren't open, that'll be a bonus.
One time, I used to, I had a tight relationship with the training staff and everything. Yeah. So sometimes during the preseason game, they'd have hot dogs in one of the storage rooms off in the back, and they'd have them at halftime. So it was like the fourth preseason game, and I was like, all right, I'm about to go get my hot dogs on. I had, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 hot dogs. And then all of a sudden, we get out in the end of the third quarter, and there were a bunch of injuries. And coach comes over to me and is like, hey, Seth, get on the bike and warm up just in case you have to go in. I'm over on the bike, like, burping up all these hot dogs and everything. It was going to be – I've never thrown up on the football field before, but I was so nervous that I was going to not just vomit, but vomit hot dogs on the field and for the television cameras.
Seth's loosening up on the exercise bike, and the people are standing there going, what smells like sauerkraut?
Is that ketchup? Do you put ketchup on your hot dog, Seth?
Weird.
No, I don't. I swear, I don't.
Loser. So, Seth, you had another moment at a Texan Zoom conference yesterday with one of the players, with Nick Martin. The question that we've all wanted to know the answer to for the entire offseason, you asked Nick Martin yesterday in his session with the media.
Yeah, and I had a little bit of trouble at the beginning, but we just went ahead and left that on there so everybody can hear just how human I am.
Yeah, I think it's good to try to humanize you because I think most people think you're perfect, and this actually shows that
generally
you're,
what they say.
That you're far from perfect. Yeah, here is that moment on yesterday's Nick Martin Zoom conference call.
Seth, You're on mute, Seth. You gotta unmute yourself.
I can't do these technical things by myself, man. Hey, Nick, which specific piece of equipment did you borrow from the weight room, and why was it important to you?
I like the sled. That was one of the biggest things. It's a really good look for, or work for the quads, the legs, and then you can, it's good old line work, right? I mean, you put weight on it. It's like a dry block. I think it's one of the best conditioning you can do to, it's hard to get in football shape unless you're playing football, but it kind of emulates a block, those short bursts against some big weight, really helps out.
But where would you, is that, that's what you borrowed from the weight room during the quarantine?
Yeah. Yeah. I just do right.
Where'd you do it?
Just right my front
backyard?
Lawn. No, I don't really got much. I did my front lawn, man. There was the neighbors were giving some looks. We had a couple walking a dog stop, like, what are you doing? You play ball? I was like, yeah, I play ball. Who for? I was like, the Texans. They're like, all right, keep grinding. But yeah, it was pretty funny. I got some looks.
I love this image of Nick Martin being out just either. I wasn't clear whether it was like a blocking sled or like one of the sleds that you pull and push.
Okay.
I think it was probably the kind that you stack weights on and you push it or you pull it.
Either way, it sounds like a very football specific piece of equipment. It wasn't
The,
you know, it wasn't like the lat pull down or something like
that. No. Although honestly, if you could see the look he gave when I asked it, it almost felt like one of those moments where he thought, uh oh, am I going to get in trouble if I answer this honestly from Bill O'Brien? It felt.
O'Brien's the one that told us he stole the stuff from
the
building.
I know.
Yeah.
But he, and it was multiple pieces, right? I think he basically said that the sled was his favorite. You and I both wondered why Nick just signed a huge contract. Why doesn't he just buy the equipment he needs? But this makes perfect sense. He's not going to need this when he's done playing football.
Yeah.
He'd be a moron if he tried to keep doing this after hopefully 10, 15 years of playing football. So, but I'm also intrigued by the thought of like somebody looking at houses in the neighborhood or something, you know, looking to purchase houses and seeing Nick Martin out there driving a sled around, tearing up the turf in his front yard.
I would think that would be a selling point. If you're a realtor and there's a Houston Texan in his front yard with some sort of sled getting ready for the season,
yeah.
If I'm driving somebody around looking at homes or whatever, certainly if I'm somebody who's got a home for sale in that neighborhood, I'm like, oh, Nick, keep doing that. Because, you know, most people, if they're sports fans, are going to think that's pretty badass living next door, not just next door to a player, but a player who is a man of the people like that, that likes to do his workouts right there out in the open for everybody.
I wonder, he told Greg Bailey asked a follow-up, which was good because he fleshed it out a little bit. And Nick said that his backyard was all concrete.
Mm.
I wonder if is he in a townhouse situation?
I bet he's got a townhome.
Yeah. Which is even more impressive because there's not a whole lot of green area in a townhome to be driving a sled around.
Yeah.
And so, like, it would definitely stick out like a sore thumb.
Now, I don't want to be a skeptic here, Seth, because when we first heard that Nick Martin took that equipment from the building, you and I both somewhat tongue-in-cheek skeptically said, well, that feels like, it almost feels like Nick Martin would have liked Bill O'Brien to have shown up in the middle of him stealing the equipment so he could have shown how DTS he is in this whole thing. Do we believe that Nick Martin's backyard truly was not conducive to this piece of equipment,
and in
which case he was working out in the front yard, so he was there for everybody to see in the neighborhood? Like, check out how hard I'm working here.
No, because I think he would have put it on Instagram.
I'm only asking the question. I'm not accusing. You asked the question. Yeah.
I honestly, like, there's receipts for all this stuff these days. If he were into that, then it would be on Instagram. And the fact that this didn't show up on Instagram I think is pretty telling. I'm looking at a men's health article right this moment of this LeCharles Bentley camp where all these various offensive linemen are working out. And, boy, LeCharles Bentley is stacked. He's built. If you wanted to be out there public, then you can get it out there public.
Yeah. That's a thing now, huh? These former players who have camps for current players. Who's the pass rusher that had one for pass rushers?
The old Atlanta Falcon, Chuck Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chuck Smith and LeCharles Bentley's camp. All these offensive linemen come out of college and they're just not as prepared for the NFL as they used to be because the NFL game is so much different than the college game these days. Although the NFL is becoming more like college at this point.
Yep.
But I think that, that's the fact that he was hitting the sled. I feel good about that. That's one of the things you discover as you get older. And another bit of advice I give to all high school kids, if you want to really get in shape for camp, for summer, for training camp, go hit the sled. Or you got to do something that simulates like a full body effort and do it with very little rest. Like I used to go and simulate the first 45 minutes of practice. I would try to do it in 20 minutes. Like I would take half the rest that you usually do. I'd drive the sled eight times, you know, with like 10 seconds rest in between each one. And like it's amazing how much better you feel when you go through camp when you do that. So I feel like Nick Martin knows that too. Nick Martin has probably done a better job of getting himself into football shape than maybe some guys that were just out running some striders here and there.
The NFL got a bit of a scare over the weekend. They've had nearly a flawless COVID sheet through training camp. Got a big scare over the weekend, actually. What if what happened over the weekend with the NFL happened during the regular season? Seth and I will discuss next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday text message. Starting an hour behind on this dirty Monday on the radio.com app. It was a disappointing Astros weekend, but I hope it's mentioned that while they were swept, they didn't lose any ground to the Rangers in the playoff race. Spoiler alert, listener who's listening on the radio.com rewind feature, we did mention that they've got plenty of room between them and the Rangers. So I bring up that text to encourage people to download the radio.com app to bring us with you wherever you go. Do it now.
Oh, you're such a professional. Good job.
No problem.
Calling it a dirty Monday because we're going to be on the dirty side of the storm.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I read it verbatim, so I would think so. Are you concerned at all about Marco and Laura, that just hideous power couple ransacking us?
I'm supposed to be more concerned about Laura, right? Marco's veering off towards...
I'll be honest with you, Seth. I haven't followed it super closely. I figure there's not a lot I can do to control it, and if it gets here, it gets here. This just... I live on the 15th floor of a building now, so I'm not quite as concerned about the water part of this thing creeping onto my kitchen floor.
Provided they're telling you the truth about your hurricane force wind protection on those windows.
That is true.
There's you might be on the 15th floor of a building, Sean, which is all well and good as long as the windows hold up. Right. If they don't, then it can get real ugly real fast.
Good point. Yeah, good point. Yeah, I'm not sure which one we're supposed to be more concerned about. I'm just kind of keeping my eye on the, just keeping my eye outside. I'm just looking outside. I'm going, nope, sun's still out. Okay, good.
We'll bone up and we'll be your source for all things hurricane. Should have tuned in.
Since we got the coronavirus under control now, Seth and I can shift our focus over to meteorology.
We'll turn into the middle-aged men that we are, and we'll just sit there and look out the window and be like, wow, it's blowing really hard, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Give the people the info they need. So, Seth, do you get the same way I do right now, that when there's any tweet that you see from a known insider of any of these sports, whether it's Ken Rosenthal in baseball or whether it's Pelissero, Schefter, Rapoport in football, Woj in basketball. Basketball is so off the grid with COVID right now because they have been perfect in that bubble. More so baseball because we know it's ripped through a couple clubhouses, and football because it has yet to get on the field. Anytime I see a tweet from one of these guys and the word COVID jumps out before I can read the tweet, I'm like, oh God, please, no. Please don't let this be something that's going to eliminate this sport. I don't know if you get the same way. I get anxiety when I see these tweets. So when I saw the tweet yesterday from Pelissero and it had the word bioreference and COVID in it, I'm going, oh no. Please, please, please don't let there be a locker room where there's double digit COVID or something. Where now all of a sudden we're having to have these conversations about the season not starting. As it turns out, there were double-digit positive COVID tests in several locker rooms yesterday, all with teams who sent their specimens from the test to the same bioreference lab in New Jersey. 10 teams in all, 6 teams with from a half dozen to double-digit false positives. What was your reaction to this story? As it turns out, this is not a story that's going to jeopardize the season. It's more of a story of, like, this lab needs to get its act in order.
To be clear, those were false positives.
False positives.
So there are all these false positives. And Minnesota had 12 false positives. Where I don't know. My thought is I'm kind of glad that it happened now, right? And I also think that probably a good move that they got rid of the preseason games. Because that could have, depending on when anybody's preseason games were scheduled, not as many Sunday preseason games these days, but who knows what would have happened. You would have had to cancel a preseason game. It's always, hasn't it? It has always been, and it will remain, a matter of, okay, how good and reliable is the testing? Because the better and the more reliable the testing is, then the more we can control this thing. And they've made great strides, but... Yeah, this is the fear that this strikes is that if this were to happen to any of these teams on a Sunday, then the game would probably be canceled.
Right.
And I don't think we can afford that. So maybe this will put some more fail safes into the system. We're getting very, very close to having the testing that only takes hours. And with that, I think then you're going to really be able to nail things down. Guys will be traveling in a bubble on Saturday. So I'm not overly concerned. But I think it helps you keep your vigilance and remember, okay, there are a lot of obstacles here that maybe are unforeseen.
Is there any part of you that this feels a little suspicious?
No. Like, okay. How so?
I don't know. The 10 teams all from the same lab. I don't know. There's a lot of people that don't want football to happen, or there's a lot of people. You know, this is one of – I'm no conspiracy theorist. I'm throwing it out there. Does it feel a little suspicious that there's this lab that you have a bunch of teams? These specimens all came from different places, and you got a bunch of teams with all these false positives.
No, I guess not, just because I know that – I think there's a tendency sometimes where we want medicine and we want lab testing. We want to believe that it's – ironclad, 100% accurate all the time, and the fact of the matter is it just isn't, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that this stuff happens, I guess, barring any actual evidence of some disgruntled lab worker who lost money on the Super Bowl or something, I would be surprised that were the case.
I'd be shocked. It wasn't my first thought either, but I saw people on social media bringing up that, and again, social media is a cesspool for taking the scenario that's at one far end or the other and then trying to perpetuate it. That's why I just asked the question generically. I didn't want to give you my opinion. I was curious what yours was on that.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I didn't immediately go there, but I saw some people saying, well, you know, this does seem a little suspicious that it's a sport where some people are really, really up in arms at the sports even getting back on the field. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that lab workers wouldn't let that get in the way of them losing their job or jeopardizing this entire – this entire $75 million contract that BioReference has with the NFL, this is probably one of the biggest deals that company has ever had with any other company.
It's a I guess the biggest one, the question I'd be is, okay, is BioReference actually ready for this, and how did this happen? If I'm Roger Goodell, I would say, all right, I just spent $70 million of the owner's money on this. How exactly did this happen, and how are we going to prevent it from happening again?
My other question that I have relative to this specifically with BioReference is they have five labs around the country, Seth, that these tests are all going to. They're getting shipped to, overnighted to get processed. Depending on where you are, you can either drive them there or overnight them there, whatever the case may be. And I'm looking at some of the teams that were impacted by this. And, okay, the Bills are up in Buffalo. The Steelers, Pittsburgh, not a big town. Minneapolis, the Vikings were in here. The Bears are one of the teams that were impacted by this. And my first thought was Chicago does not have a BioReference lab. It's the third largest city in our country. The closest lab for the Bears to send their COVID test to is in New Jersey somewhere. That felt really strange to me. I tweeted this out yesterday because I think there's probably Texan fans who were curious when they saw this, like, wow, could the Texans be one of these teams that are swept up in this? I mean, you see enough teams that are geographically not anywhere close to New Jersey. The Texans actually may have the best scenario of any of the 32 NFL teams. The BioReference lab that our tests go to, I say our tests because I get tested every day, the BioReference lab that our tests go to from NRG Stadium is a mile and a half from the stadium. So they literally drive them over. We've got the results by the end of the day.
What if it's flooded by a hurricane, Sean?
Seth?
What happens then?
Seth?
Well, I guess, you know, that's another valid concern, too, is natural disasters happen in the months of September and October in this country pretty regularly. Yeah. I wonder if there are going to be issues at times where, a team that's sheltering because of a hurricane or what have you, it's probably also going to have a hard time getting tests out. Like, this stuff will come up. I guess I'm optimistic that the NFL season's going to go 16 full games or 17 full weeks. I think, though, that I also anticipate there being at least a couple of cancellations or forfeitures because of issues like that, and that they'll have to figure it out on the fly. I mean, there's so much stuff that comes up. Like, think about this pandemic really – The biggest surprise probably to myself and a lot of people is all the logistical challenges there have been and all of the shortages that you didn't anticipate, right? Like toilet paper. Who on earth anticipated a toilet paper shortage? And yet there we were wiping our butts with paper towel. coin shortage. We've got to run a damn coin shortage now. There's not enough coins in circulation. I don't know if you've been to a place yet where they've had to say that they can't make change or what have you. But frankly, because of closures, there just aren't enough coins out there. So there, it's all this stuff that's unanticipated. And yeah, I would imagine at some point over the next 20 weeks, there's going to be a few unanticipated challenges to playing an NFL season.
Saliva test, baby. Saliva test. That is the key. The saliva direct test, where you don't have to ship it off to a lab that's
right.
Eight states away.
Yeah. Until all of a sudden we have a spit tube shortage. Which is, that's our next shortage.
Everybody's spitting into shot glasses and just putting tinfoil on the top of it and sending it to a lab. All right, we have headlines that we need to get into, and we're taking you to Texans training camp live at the top of the hour. Texans practice number 8 today over at NRG Stadium at the Methodist Training Center. Top Texan storylines. We're at the halfway point of training camp practices. Top Texan storylines at the halfway point, including the possibility, just possibility, that Bill O'Brien gets his biggest win as a general manager. That's next. It is happening at the top of the hour. Texans training camp live. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. They will be out at practice. I will be out at practice later on this morning. 8:30, an early COVID test today. So wish me luck. 12 straight COVID tests successful, Seth.
You want to ambush the COVID virus while it's sleeping is the theory there. Get him
that's
in the morning before he's learned to hide.
Yeah, that's right.
So we have one of our listeners, Pharmacist Glenn, said, I was joking about how there might be a spit tube shortage or something because we've got coin shortages.
Yeah.
We had toilet paper shortages. You just never know what's going to come up. Pharmacist Glenn says that spit tube shortages might be a thing, actually.
Yeah, he said, I could see the spit tube shortage being a thing. There's some fear if a vaccine is available sooner than later, there may be a shortage of the little glass vials that they come
in. Yeah, so, I mean, he wasn't saying specifically, like, he knows about spit tubes, but just any of these things, right? Because that's what's happened with the testing and a lot of the steps along the way. It's like it's one chemical that everything else is lined up, but they can't get a hold of this one chemical or what have you. I've learned so much more about logistics and distribution patterns, Sean. I feel like I've got a new career ahead of me sometime after all this is over.
Seth, is it irresponsible of you and I that just because Glenn tacked the word pharmacist onto the front of his name, you and I are reading it as if it's gospel? Right now?
No, I know Pharmacist Glenn.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I know, and I never realized he was a pharmacist, and he's a long time, he's a huge Texans fan, he's
had
a lot of events,
okay.
But I never realized he was a pharmacist until one day I'd had about like 1 hour of sleep because I had a horrible sinus infection. This was before I got that balloon sinuplasty,
yeah.
And I showed up at his pharmacy at 3 a.m. to buy Sudafed. Which is the precursor to methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you're trying to get Sudafed over the counter, you gotta give them your license and sign all this stuff and everything. And there's always been a part of me that worries that maybe Pharmacist Glenn thinks that I was in there, stocking up for my meth lab at 3 a.m.
Right.
Trying to do it when nobody was watching. Or
right.
Anything.
That he's gonna out yeah. you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't do it, Glenn.
Yeah.
It's our little secret
That's
between
right.
you and me.
That's right. Hey, by the way, are you mad that you didn't get put on that COVID advisory committee of former players and former GMs and coaches? I feel like as the coronavirus commissioner of Harris County, you got snubbed in this thing.
I don't worry about it at all, Sean, because there are 8 members on this committee.
Yeah.
And let's just say, as I put my finger on my nose and, move it towards you, 3 of these guys I've had close relationships with. My influence will be known and heard, okay?
The advisory committee is a Seth Payne puppet regime.
Yeah, this is, I didn't need my name to be up there. A lot
I got
of times
you.
It's better to be working in the shadows. But let's see, Charlie Cassidy is on. I'm joking, everybody. I forget. Sometimes I sound like I'm being serious when I'm being sarcastic. I didn't even know this thing was being created. But this committee, there are 3 people on it that have attachments to either the Texans or the Jaguars. Tom Coughlin, and then Charlie Cassidy and Rick Smith.
Yeah.
So 50% of Texans GMs are on this committee.
Seth, this committee is like a Seth Payne, This Is Your Life. You have the coach that drafted you, the GM that brought you over in the expansion draft, and the GM that let you go.
That's true. My full 10 years in the NFL is covered by these 3 gentlemen.
They should call this the Seth Payne Circle of Life Committee is what they should call this. Yeah.
I wonder, let me try to think if I even have, I think I've got Casterly's phone number still, I've got Coughlin's number still, I do not have Rick Smith's number.
Yeah.
So I'll have to try to, I'm going to text Coughlin like a 3,000 word
Manifesto.
Manifesto, yeah. On all the things that need to happen.
Here are the eight people on it real quick. Champ Bailey, Isaac Bruce, Charlie Casserly, Tom Coughlin, Marvin Lewis, Troy Polamalu, Bill Polian, and Rick Smith. And when I saw this committee, Seth, I'm like, okay, what type of advice are these eight guys going to give about the coronavirus? Like, none of them have a medical degree. And the more I read about it, I think this is more about, like, what is fair to do if the coronavirus hits a locker room. Like, let's ask these eight guys, does it make sense to cancel games? And if so, how do you maintain the integrity of the season? Should there be forfeits? Do you reschedule? That's what I think they're looking more the input from them on the mechanics of the season versus any sort of input like, well, we should cancel this game.
Yeah. You know,
it's more like if the medical people say to do X, then how does it affect the season?
There's one thing that I would say about this, and it's that they need to stop handing out all this hard candy to Bill Polian in the form of taking his suggestions about various things. Because remember, Polian's the reason that we have this stupid playoff rule now.
Yeah.
That was his suggestion, where it's a 12-minute playoff or whatever it is. He had some other cockamamie suggestion a few weeks ago, and I don't think got pushed through, but it had something to do with the COVID. And now he's sitting on this committee. Frankly, I feel like they need to find other things for Bill Polian to occupy his time with.
No kidding. So Texans are halfway through training camp practices. Practice 7 was yesterday. They've got 14 of these leading up to the season opener against Kansas City. First, I guess scrimmage in the stadium is going to first and maybe only, I'm not sure, but it's going to be this Thursday night at 7:00. They will let the media covering the team will be allowed to observe. So I will have observations on that on Friday. Seth, to me, as I'm going by what I hear out at camp, what I see with my eyes, the reaction I get to certain things on social media and so forth, to me, if I'm narrowing down the Texan training camp storylines at the halfway mark, I'll rapid fire these. There's four big ones to me that are the storylines with this team right now. One is everybody's asking, is everything cool with J.J. Watt? Like, people want to know that. Even though O'Brien has all but shouted from the rooftops, and we in the media have also said, he's fine. He looks fine. He's just not practicing. You have to believe that the team is getting him ramped up so he's healthy to play on September 10th. People are still getting worked up over the fact that there are practices where he's either not even out there at all or he's working off to the side. Yesterday, he was in pads for stretching, and then he went over and took the pads off, worked out off to the side, and then kind of stood with his teammates during 11-on-11, just sort of chopping it up. And I guess I would say everything's fine with J.J. Watt right now, but that feels like almost the number one question that people want to know. Why is he not practicing?
Right, and I guess it's as simple as, hey, he's old, you know?
Play a lot of football.
He's right, and he's not old necessarily by just, you look at his age, he's 30. He's not super old by NFL standards, but if you think about the wear and tear on his body, every single time you have an injury, that trauma just kind of it wears on you. It accumulates. And he's got the body of maybe a 35- or 36-year-old football player in some respects. So they need to take it easy on him. And training camp is this balance between getting all the teamwork done and getting the timing and everything that you need to get done, but also understanding that as you're working on all that stuff as a team, that you're – traditionally in football, guys have gotten worn down during training camp. It's not like you go to camp and get in shape and then you're in the best shape of your life. I think a lot of times for most guys, it's you show up in great shape and you gradually get whittled down over the course of 5 weeks. And the first 2 weeks of the regular season feel like, oh, I can finally relax and actually start getting football shape or start to feel good and ready. And they're trying to balance that out with JJ, and they know, look, he knows the defense, and even though it's a new defense, he knows everything that he's going to understand very quickly everything that Weaver's putting in, and they're going to give him, I would guess, 2 or 3 weeks. Well, what are we? Are we inside 3 weeks yet?
The season starts 2 weeks from this Thursday.
My goodness.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
It's getting there.
So he was out there in pads yesterday. I would imagine he'll start getting some teamwork over the next few days. If we get inside of 2 weeks before the first game and he's not getting teamwork, then I'd actually be a little bit nervous that maybe they're holding him out for even for reasons above and beyond just being careful.
Certainly one of the biggest things we'll keep an eye on because people want to know about it. Now, along those lines, Seth, I would say next storyline, even with no J.J. Watt, the defense has actually looked pretty good in training camp here, and I say it like somewhat surprised, like, hey, actually not bad, because they were not a good defense last year without J.J. Watt. And I know you haven't been out there, but just generally speaking, in your 10 years in the NFL, how often is it that even average to below average defenses are ahead of the offense this time of year?
I think it's not that uncommon, especially when there's a new defensive coordinator who's going to be perhaps more aggressive. If Anthony Weaver is going to be more aggressive, then he's probably showing a lot of looks that this offense isn't used to seeing. So they're getting on page. I guess the word of caution would be that this defense, their biggest weakness was against the pass last year in both rushing the passer and defending the pass, or in the defensive backfield. And every day that you report, you know, for the most part, the really stud wide receivers haven't been out there.
That's right.
So they've been doing a great job covering backup wide receivers. Yeah. It's a different deal versus Tyreek Hill. And then you said, hey, Brandon Cooks was out there Saturday, yes. And he was torching people.
I was just going to say, it was a different deal with Brandon Cooks, who is good, but he ain't Tyreek Hill. Yeah.
So it's like, they've done a good job. I'm not going to hate on them for that, but I'm still nervous that they haven't really seen genuine speed out there all that much.
That's why I asked it that way, no doubt. Okay, Seth, this one is a more big picture one where we are at the, you know, if this were a drive in an NFL game, we're starting at our own 2-yard line and we're maybe at our own 10-yard line right now. But is it possible that Bill O'Brien actually winds up winning the DeAndre Hopkins trade? And hear me out on this. To me, the three things that need to happen for O'Brien to even have an argument that he wins that trade, because it's so lopsided right now in the minds of so many, because he got Hopkins, he traded Hopkins for what feels like very little. If David Johnson is a Pro Bowl level running back, if Ross Blacklock is ultimately a plus level defensive lineman, but especially if he gets in the rotation early on as a rookie, and if Hopkins' first year in Arizona gets a little sideways either because of contractual reasons or because of injuries, then I think you start to look at this deal and you go, okay, well, you know, maybe O'Brien knew what he was doing in this whole thing.
Well,
and real quick, so far in training camp, you can just sort of quasi-check all three. You can temporarily check all three of those boxes. Johnson's look good. Blacklock does not look overwhelmed as a rookie. And Hopkins has yet to get on the field for the Cardinals.
Yeah, but it sounds like most of the wide receivers for the Texans have barely gotten on the field for the Texans too. So all those guys, when you look at the DeAndre Hopkins trade, it's not just DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson, right? It's the ensuing Brandon Cooks trade. It's all these other things and other moves that you built around it. Yeah. And I guess the biggest question will be, look, Bill O'Brien said, hey, wait 3 years until you judge. Did he say 3 years? He said, wait a while before you judge this trade.
He said 1, 2, 3 years you got to wait sometimes. Yeah.
So 3 years from now, do we think Brandon Cooks is going to be here? Do we think David Johnson's going to be here? Do we think Kenny Stills is going to be here or Will Fuller? I'm not so sure. I would say that DeAndre Hopkins is probably going to still be producing 3 years from now for the Arizona Cardinals. So, I mean, we'll continue to check in, but for whatever the building layers and layers of players that O'Brien and Easterby want to do, that's a really good. I like that concept. I like that notion, but know that these layers of players that you've built have all been short-term patchwork. And you got to figure out a way to replace those guys within the next couple of years.
When you frame it that way, that's really interesting. When you frame it that way, Seth, and you listed off those players, are they going to be here in 3 years? David Johnson, I say no. Kenny Stills, I say no. Will Fuller, I would bet no right now on Will Fuller. Brandon Cooks, maybe. If you could do a parlay on yes or no for all four of those guys, I would do a parlay with no's for all four and hope for the best that thing pays off.
And that just continues to be. That's the great conflict between a general manager and a head coach. A head coach, man, he's desperate to win, as he should be. And usually the general manager is the adult that kind of guides him and says, like, oh, we can't spend this money right now. We can't trade this draft pick right now. And that'll be the great defining moment, you know, over the next 3 years. And we'll use, I mean, that was Bill O'Brien's advice. Let's wait 3 years to judge this. Now, if Bill O'Brien is still a general manager and head coach 3 years from now, he wins. Like, that's
well,
it. Like, what do we.
And it means the team has probably won something at a significant level if he's still here 3 years from now, is my guess. I don't know that Cal McNair has the same level of patience overall as his father did, who had the patience of a saint when it came to letting guys keep their jobs. I don't know if Cal's wired the same way or not. But if Bill O'Brien's still here as the coach and general manager 3 years from now, then chances are the team has won at a level where we go back and look at the Hopkins trade and say, yeah, I would do it over again because we did X, Y, Z ultimately as a team. You know, you wouldn't go back and reverse engineer anything.
And I would guess Bill O'Brien's kind of, he's judging it that way too.
Yeah.
if he's being honest with himself, and he's, you know, I think Bill O'Brien is just tries to be honest with himself when he assesses things. It would be okay. Our goal in this wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just a tit for tat. We're trading this apple for that orange. It was, we're trying to create a more well-rounded roster. We're trying to have a complete. So maybe just in that philosophy working out this year, if they can replicate it over the next couple of years, then yeah, that's a victory.
Okay, I should explain something I said real quick before I get to the last storyline. Someone says, is Blacklock part of that trade? They used the pick, the 40th overall pick that they got in the Hopkins deal, they used on Ross Blacklock. That's why, yeah, I included him in that deal, just to be clear. Thank you, Texter, for pointing that out. Sometimes things that I think are easy to connect the dots, they get a little cryptic sometimes.
And I guess so that should, I mean, because the Brandon Cooks, I like to think that it's all related because,
sure,
they had the extra pick to burn.
Yep.
But even just there, just judging it just by the trade alone, yeah, maybe we should do it more strictly like,
yeah,
that.
Last one, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on this. I think the contracts of Deshaun Watson and Zach Cunningham are still a storyline as we head to the season, in large part because John McClain tweeted last Saturday, the Texans are working to get that done. Bill O'Brien had gushing praise for Zach Cunningham last week. He did not hide his cards when it came to Zach Cunningham. He walked to the poker table, flipped them around, said, hey, look at my pocket aces here, Zach. Here you go. All right, those are your Texan storylines at the halfway point of training camp practice. Let's rapid fire some headlines here from the weekend.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Rockets lose a heartbreaker in Game 3. That was really a game where they could have put the series away for all intents and purposes. They would have gone up 3-0 if they could have just inbounded a basketball and made a few free throws in the last minute of Game 3. They were up 102-97. Instead, the game goes to overtime. They lose. The Thunder score, I want to say, like the first 11 or 13 points of overtime. It took the Rockets till about 4 minutes into overtime to score their first basket.
Yeah,
in large
over
part
seven.
Because, yeah, over seven. In large part because James Harden fouled out early in overtime, and that was curtains from there. James Harden in foul trouble, Seth. How big a concern? It feels like he's spent a lot of these playoffs playing with three fouls in the first half, four fouls early in the second half. And he's good at playing with fouls, but for a guy who's been as engaged as he's been on the defensive end, that's all of a sudden that hamstrings him a little bit at the defensive end.
It's actually,
end.
Right, and it's, I'll look at the positive side of it here. It's that he actually is super engaged on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm not overly concerned about it. I think it's just one of these things that comes with playing this style of basketball. And I'd rather have him kind of learn this lesson early on than have to learn it in the conference finals or have to learn it in the finals. So I'm not overly concerned about that. I'm not overly concerned about the three-point shooting. The team was 30% from three on what was a lot of wide open threes. If they were forcing three-point shots, I would worry about it. These are wide-open threes. They should start to drop. I do worry about Eric Gordon specifically in his three-point shooting just because he's had his knee issue. I mean, he's 4 of 26 on threes in this series.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's just horrible.
At the very least, just get back to being normally bad. Yeah. Like, shoot like 25% on your threes or something, and you win this game.
Yeah, honestly, if you're OKC, if you're a fan or you're even on that team and you're being honest with yourself, you're going, man, we're... It took us overtime to beat these guys. They beat us by double digits the first couple of games, and in the last two games, they haven't even shot the ball well. And the Thunder got as good a game as they're going to get from their three-guard rotation of Gilgeous-Alexander, Schroeder, and Chris Paul in Game 3, and it took overtime and a complete Rockets gaffe at the end of the game to win the game. I still think the Rockets win this series in six at the most. Tip-off today at 3 o'clock. The Astros, meanwhile, not a fun weekend. Not a fun weekend for results in Houston sports. The Astros follow up their 8-game winning streak by going out to San Diego, Seth, and getting swept by the Padres. It was 13-2 on Saturday. That was not fun. The Brandon Belak experience turned sour on Saturday in the early innings of that game, unfortunately. Batting practice.
He didn't walk a bunch of people.
True. True. Silver lining. Silver lining.
Was it 7 runs in 1 1/3 innings?
It was way too many. That's all
it
I
was,
know.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that was ugly. The poor
it was not
kid.
Fun. It was not
it
fun.
Was I jinxed him hardcore.
Meanwhile, yesterday, Zach Greinke, not his best performance, but a performance that if the Astros bats were doing what they would normally do, full strength, 3 runs in 6 innings by your starting pitcher is going to be more than enough of an effort to win most games. instead, this team's a little offensively challenged right now. So Greinke leaves yet another game with a no decision yesterday. I think Greinke's only got like one decision this year so far, one, two at the most. It was Inoli Paredes' two-run home run served up to Manny Machado in the eighth inning that was the difference in the game. The Astros lose 5-3. Seth, the good news, they're still 4.5 games in front of the Rangers for the second-place playoff spot in the AL West.
In this new playoff format, then they're at very slim risk of missing the playoffs unless everything just completely falls apart. Sean, you were doing your show yesterday, so unfortunately you had to miss one of the most entertaining Greinke starts we've seen. And he's had some really good ones so far this season. The irony is, or I guess the sadness of it is, that there's no fans there to enjoy any of this. But he had the slowest pitch by a pitcher since 2017, a 53.5-mile per hour EFIS pitch.
I saw that during my show because it showed up on Twitter by about 10 different people tweeting a video out.
It was so funny because he's doing that thing where he's signaling the pitch to Maldonado, and he says...
Openly.
Yeah, and like it looks like, is he just trolling his old teammate here? This is what Greinke said. He set up a way, and I knew we weren't on the same page. So Maldonado set up different than what he expected. So I was like, man, I was about to throw a pitch out, and then I was like, maybe step off. And then I was like, okay, no pitch out. I don't know what happened in the last half second where I ended up throwing it as a strike. So I think during the game, we all assumed that he kind of set that up, right? Because then he followed it up with a high 80s fastball after that. But it was just, it was him kind of getting indecisive at the last moment and throwing this 53.5-mile-an-hour pitch. And then an inning or two later, he thinks that there's something wrong with the mound, and that's what's scuffing up his mechanics somewhat. So they zoom down to a picture of the grounds crew working on the mound, and he's just sitting there cross-legged watching them. Like it's story time in kindergarten.
More fun. Okay, more fun, Seth. Garrett Cole in 2019 or Zach Greinke in 2020?
Well, Zach Greinke in terms of just the... it was fun to watch Cole just go out there and assassinate people.
Yes.
But yeah. Greinke, just on the lighthearted side of things, Greinke, way more actual fun.
Yes, yeah. I agree. That's what I'm trying to gauge. Like, how much, you know, if you're win at all costs, like Cole, yeah, that's fun, just completely plundering people. But this Greinke thing, I'm enjoying this Greinke experience.
Garrett Cole, it was kind of like, this is fun the same way if you were like Attila the Hun burning and slashing a village.
Right.
Like, that's good. That's fun in his opinion. Where with Greinke, this is more like, hey, we all got drunk on a Sunday night. Wasn't that a good time?
Yes, Sunday fun day with Zach Greinke. That's what it was.
It was actually a really fun broadcast to watch other than the outcome of the game yesterday because they kept revisiting. They revisited the beehive incident from Blum back in the day. They revisited when Osmus was at the plate and the Blue Angels flew over.
I saw like, that, yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, though, the actual baseball was not all that much fun.
Not fun for the Astros. They've lost three in a row. They're 15-13. The Angels come to town, and the Angels, despite having two of the best players in baseball on their team, are absolutely horrific. This should be, just what the doctor ordered, a home series against the Los Angeles Angels. Seth, next headline, Earl Thomas cut loose by the Baltimore Ravens yesterday. That on the heels of a fight, an altercation with a teammate, Chuck Clark, earlier in the weekend. And the Ravens cut Earl Thomas for conduct detrimental to the team, which is code for we do not want to pay you the $10 million we have guaranteed you for this year. There's expected to be a little Donnybrook over this thing where Earl Thomas wants his money. The team doesn't want to pay him. The Ravens are moving on without Earl Thomas. Seth, I'll ask you what I asked you earlier for the benefit of the 757 in the morning audience. If you were an NFL team, how heavily would it weigh into your decision to pick up Earl Thomas, the fact that the Ravens leadership committee went to John Harbaugh and said, we don't want this guy anymore?
It would be really, really big. And in a weird, strange way, Earl Thomas is, it feels like he's gone the Antonio Brown route. If you look at the incidents that he's had with teammates over the last year, the incident that he had with his wife, where his wife was brandishing a pistol as she confronted him about a sexual interlude he was having with his brother and a couple young ladies they met
not
on
with
the
her.
Internet. Yeah, there was some. Yeah, yeah. She wasn't upset about his poor performance.
Boy, that would be pretty draconian of her, right there.
There's a whole lot going on here. And once this, it'd be one thing if it was Earl Thomas rebelling against a jackass coach or something, but it's not even that. It's his own teammates. I don't know. I don't know how you bring him in. You certainly can't give him guaranteed money at this point.
Cowboys are the chalk, right? Just because they're the Cowboys, and he's from Texas, and he's basically openly said that he wants to play for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They were moving money around this weekend for some reason, you know, air quotes, for some reason. Tyron Smith restructured his deal to open up like $7 million in cap space, for what it's worth. So.
I always thought he was from somewhere up near Dallas also, but he's actually from like way, way east.
In Port Arthur.
But it's like north of Port Arthur.
Okay.
It's way up. Like but he's closer to Houston than he is for Dallas.
Yeah.
So I say good riddance to bad rubbish.
Yeah,
my grandma might say.
He ain't coming to Houston. Let's just put that out there right now. Earl Thomas will not be a Houston Texan. Just read the stories about Earl Thomas. That does not fit what they're trying to put together in the locker room here. All right, Seth, we're about out of time. I will be out of practice. I will come back tomorrow with several thoughts and takes on practice. In the meantime, my friend, antibodies to you.
Yeah, and you're right about the Port Arthur thing. I'm wrong.
Okay.
Antibodies to you, I guess.
Thank you. For being right about Earl Thomas's place of birth. All right, we're done. Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, they got you. Texans Training Camp Live. Bill O'Brien, 9 o'clock press conference today. Until then, until 6 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.